It's August 2nd, 2014, and I just wanted to make a few quick notes. They may be a little disjointed, but I'm just trying to work through the structure of the material that I wish to share and the story of how I'm going to present it. I guess if the material, my perspectives, if that's my gift that I'm trying to make a present of to others, then I guess the story, the storyline that I choose, I guess it's sort of like the packaging, the way that the present or gift is all wrapped up. And, of course, over time, I've come to realize that that's actually a critical part. Critical element of how successful I'll be in sharing this material. So, one of the things... There was kind of two things that I was attempting to kind of find or create a correlation between, and that was the story that I'd heard years ago about the editor who was interviewing to hire for entry-level position at his newspaper. And I remember, you know, basically it was the story about he had a small number of candidates that were all pretty much equally qualified. And in order to narrow it down to that one person that he was going to hire, he put a broom handle just outside his door behind a filing cabinet so that the end of the handle jutted out ever so slightly in the doorway, in the walkway. And then he called for each of the candidates one by one to step into the office and be interviewed. And during that process, one of those candidates hesitated momentarily at the door as they were entering across the threshold, and that they had seen the broom handle, and they took their foot, and with their shoe, they just slid it slightly back to where it would not be in the walkway. And as the story went, that was the individual that the editor hired. And in fact, I think it mentioned that the position that he was hiring this candidate for was actually the position that he had started with the paper many years earlier and had worked himself up to being the editor. So what he said was his reasoning behind this selection process was he couldn't teach initiative. He could teach everything else, and other mentors within the organization could teach everything else that was required to excel at the job. To teach them the basic, to provide them the basic tools, and then help them to learn the skills on how to use those tools. But the one thing he couldn't teach was initiative. He had made the statement that you either have it or you don't. And, you know, I think the whole point to that, when I look back at it, it was just the idea of, if someone has initiative, then they don't, it's not required that they be told what to do about every little thing. You know, some people refer to it as a self-starter. They're not afraid to think for themselves and then to act. And I think oftentimes, you know, feet of clay could, you know, it's an indication where, you know, they're, even if they're thinking about it, they're afraid to do anything because they're afraid they're going to make a mistake. But I think the point is, part of the learning process is you learn through your mistakes. You learn by your mistakes. And so I think part of what I remember the character relaying was that if he has to tell the person every little thing to do, he might as well just do it himself. If they have initiative, they'll do some things on their own without being told and have good results. And sometimes they won't have as good a results, and they'll need guidance in developing, you know, in understanding the proper tools to use and understanding the skills that they need to develop. But the initiative allows them to learn and to grow into the positions that they assume, that they fill, and to become more competent in those positions. So it was, you know, after I heard the story, you know, it made perfect sense. It's the domino effect of how just that one little trait, one part of a person's character, one part or inclination in their temperament can make such a world of difference in the impact they have on the people that they work with and those relationships and upon the organization as a whole. So I was trying to understand how that related to my storyline. The old man stared down at his notes through tired eyes. And I remember that the reason I was the initial thought that I had behind that line was that we're temporal beings. So we exist as in the human condition as individuals for a finite amount of time. But these principles and practices and the presence, you know, the presence of consciousness of conscious beings in the world, that's enduring. You know, I mean, I guess you could always stretch it out to a much, much longer or near infinite timeline and say, well, you know, human beings, you know, may not at some point exist. But that, to me, that doesn't really, I don't think that really approaches the question of, okay, but does consciousness still exist? And if it does still exist, then are these principles, at least the principles, enduring? And perhaps, I would think even the principles and practices. You know, principles sort of relate to the tools, and practices sort of relates to the skills that we develop or that are developed in utilizing the tools. And so my approach to the telling of the story was based on, well, initially or primarily the bridge function. Literally the hands of the master on the tiller of the world, doing what a man can to guide the course of thought and therefore the course of events. But in the sense of the old master recognizing that he is in the waning phase of his life, the primary focus there is upon the chain of custody. In other words, ensuring in every way that the master possibly can, you know, and of course I can also refer to that role as the wizard, the avatar, the blending of and the synergy, the symphony of the avatar, the champion, and the exemplar, whereas I call it the ace. But it's in that position of the wizard or the master who has, you know, become initiated to the practice, who has worked in the practice, and then in the later years of development, of self-exploration, self-discovery, and self-actualization, which is exaltation. In those later years, they begin to work on the practice and further the practice and add to the practice, add to the craft. I should say the practice of the craft. And so at that phase, or at that, how can I say that? At that phase, it becomes a focus. I believe it becomes a focus of that incarnation, of that master or wizard, to ensure that they're engaging in everything that they can do to preserve or conserve, I think is a more important or a more direct meaning, to conserve each and every advance that has been realized through their practice of the craft, through their working on the craft, into as a legacy for the future of the craft or the practice of the craft. And so, although that can partly be accomplished through incorporation, and of course that involves organizational entities, I would believe that the primary way it's preserved or conserved is through embodiment in others. In other words, through the continual cycle of initiation, apprenticeship, journeyman, and master. In other words, as he's staring down at his notes, he is in every way attempting to envision the different ways that he can initiate others into the craft and share with them every aspect, every tidbit, every recipe, every ingredient, every principle, every practice possible, so that the chain of custody is not broken. And it was during that the contemplation of understanding, of trying to understand what I meant by not breaking the chain of custody, that somehow I correlated it to the story of the old man, the editor, who was hiring, who was attempting to hire a candidate into the entry-level position. because to me there was a parallel circumstance between those two stories, or if they didn't exist previously in my thought processes, I realized that there could be an easy correlation between the two stories. And so to me, the phrase, you know, or the beginning of the story, the old man stared down at his notes through tired eyes, is very similar to the beginning process of the editor realizing that in his span of life and times, that he is waning, and he needs to begin to think about how to pass the torch to the next generations, to the generations that follow him, and how to share the best of what he has come to practice, you know, the best parts of his craft, and how he engages in that through his practice. You know, it's one thing to know, but that's of potential value. The only true or actual value is an application. So it's about how he applies the principles and practices, how he applies the tools that he has at his disposal, and how he has developed the skills to utilize those tools. And so, to me, both sides of that are one and the same. Now, another thing that I was kind of toying with while I was thinking along those lines was, it really doesn't matter to me, in some respects, it's somewhat arbitrary what specific field of what specific discipline or type of activity the old master or the wizard is engaged in. I mean, in my notes from years ago, I loosely referred to this as many diverse operational platforms. In other words, being an individual, an embodiment of the craft through their practice in some type of organization. And of course, you know, very loosely, you know, in my models, you know, it's like you have your family, your friends, the career, the work environment you work in, your community, your country, and of course, you know, we're becoming more and more global. So, you know, we simultaneously impact many different levels of relationships, the dynamics of these relationships. And so, whether the person is in the advertising industry, or whether they're in the automotive industry or the movie industry, or, you know, it really, to me, it's arbitrary what industry or what activity they engage in. These principles and practices are applicable in every one, in all. And so it's just a matter of the individual practicing, engaging in their practice in whatever environment, whatever circumstance that they find themselves in. And with the old master, the wizard, that individual's challenge at that point is to develop a method, a recipe, so to speak, to invite others who are prepared to engage the quest in the art and science of crafting themselves and the world around them. And going back to the story of the editor, I came as I was sifting through all these concepts and all this information, all these perspectives, I realized that phrase, to search those who are prepared, I realized that word prepared to me correlated directly to initiative, someone who has initiative. And what I've come to believe, and this may or may not be true, but through my observations and experiences, you know, I don't think initiative can be taught. However, and that kind of goes along with what the editor said. I can't teach initiative. I can teach everything else that the individual needs to know to be, to contribute to the organization and to further themselves in their career, but I can't teach initiative. And what I came to believe over time was, although it can't be taught, it can be acquired. And I guess loosely the best I ever related this, the best concept or thing I could ever relate this to was the phrase that it's an acquired taste. It comes back to value and gap analysis. In other words, you know, it says there can, you know, G. Spencer Brown said there can be no distinction without motive, and there can be no motive without a difference in value. And, you know, I think it'd be reasonable to add to that, without some perceived difference in value. So basically, someone could become aware of the value of having initiative, of embodying initiative into their character. And if they became aware of it, they recognize the gap, the magnitude of the gap between the quality of life that they're living without it and the quality of life that they could live with it, then there's that internal desire to acquire it because they now understand the value of it. And so, with that said, I guess part of the task for the old wizard is to try to invite others to entertain the potential value of possessing and embodying that characteristic, that inclination of initiative. So, and I guess in the end, that all kind of comes back to the invitation. That's where I initially started when I looked at disseminating or sharing my material with others. And I think it's as true now as it was then. Yeah, because external pressure can be so easily resisted if you invite and they entertain and then they come to become... And then they come to be aware of the value, then that goes back to the conversion. Then that is converted to an internal desire, and I don't think that can be stopped. If you desire something enough, it's very tough. You know, it's kind of like persistence, you know, with that drop on the rock. You know, it's going to wear it down. And So if they really want it, I think in the end they'll get it. Well, anyway, that's about all I wanted to get down. Signing off.